Accession number 26978, Reel 4.
No, I think, well, we tried to make contact, but then I think the Scharnhorst decided that it was too great a sort of enemies for them to fight. Whether they changed their mind because of this, the number of ships that were there, or whether they didn't know that there were a number of ships there or not, I don't know. But it was rather a sort of an apprehensive time, because we didn't know whether they were going to go back into the Norwegian field, having sort of decided that there were too many ships or whatever, or whether it was just the fact that they were altering their tactics, which was in fact to get close to the convoy and to try and avoid the big ships that were on there, the naval ships.
The Belfast, the squadron followed Scharnhorst through the night, didn't she?
Yes.
Were you aware really of what was going on?
No, that I didn't. All I know was that we, at one period we started firing. What we were firing at, I had no idea because it was dark. And the action which was being taken on board, everything was sort of not in a turmoil, but it was action going on all over the ship, various things happening, and we were sort of getting ready to fire star shells and that sort of thing when we came within range, but I think it was just the busyness of everything that it sort of went over your head. You didn't realise that you were going into action.
So you were too busy really to think about it?
Oh yes, I think so. I never even thought that, well, perhaps I might sink this ship and you know, I'd go down in those icy waters. I wouldn't last very long, so it didn't matter, when, as I said before, that I couldn't swim, because it would have been a thankful sort of way to go, really, if anything had happened. We were very fortunate, really, because the other two cruisers were hit, but we managed to escape.
And were you aware when Scharnhorst was driven onto the Duke of York, and when the Duke of York got involved?
Well, the only thing I remember about that was we got a message through to the control room that the destroyers were fairly close, that they were closer than we were to the actual Scharnhorst. And the effect there was that they were able to almost get underneath the elevation of the old Scharnhorst guns. But really, even that, we didn't have any piping aboard ship to say we are now doing this, that and the other. It was just that various people at various jobs were doing their job, and it was sort of coordinated in the control room.
And did you see her sink?
No, I didn't. Whether we were far enough or too far away, but the fact that it was dark, you know, that sort of, I mean, daylight up there doesn't last, and in the darkness you don't see very much except the flashes from the guns and the sort of, really, I suppose, the actual firing of the guns from your own point, from your own craft. We did get one or two sort of near misses when the old Scharnhorst fired back, you know. But apart from that, we didn't get hit.
Did you feel? How did you feel when did they pipe the news that Scharnhorst had sunk? Or?
Yes, yes. We were told that it had been sunk, and the elation aboard was terrific, you know. But the other thing is, it was dreadful in a way because there were no really no number of survivors at all. I forget now, is it about 36 or something survivors? And I felt that it was such a lot of lives that were lost. You know, I felt, well, there were only seamen just like ourselves, you know, and trying to carry a ship through the water to... But there you are, your enemies whilst you're there. I understand there's a little group of them still in existence, but how many, I don't know.
What was the reaction like at home? When was there...
Well, when I got home, I was on 9 days embarkation leave, and because I was going to HMS King Alfred, the officer training college, once more. And the reaction was that, you know, I've been in all this fighting and that sort of thing, and I'm still alive. I think they were so thankful, you know, that I'd come through it unscathed, that it really didn't mean an awful lot to them that I'd been under fire, you know. They couldn't imagine it, really.
Even though you hadn't really been aware of what was going on at the time?
No, I think, strangely, it's one of those incidents in your life when you sort of think back as far as you can, but not an awful lot comes to mind as to how you felt and what you took notice of at the time, you know. I was quite thrilled to be in the battle. And I, you know, I felt somehow or other, I'd done a little bit of naval service, really, by that time. So I was an old lag, in a way. So there we are. But having left the Belfast, I then went off, as I say, to the training college at Hove. This time I was able to take the examinations at the end of it, having learnt a little bit about the torpedoes, the engine work, the signalling, various things. All branches of the Navy, they gave me a little bit of information about everything, so you had to pick up that. I went to the training college for at the sorry, I forgot the name of the college. It was down in Sussex, where I was given special training on the signal work. And then we went to various other courses, which helped us to get... I went down to work on some of the little tugs in the inland waters. And there we practice sort of steering a craft and working out our navigation, and also at the same time learning the rule of the road, which was red to red, green to green, perfect safety, go ahead, or the other way about, green to green, red to red, perfect safety, go ahead. So we all our navigational sort of things, and the seamanship type was almost to rhyme, so as you remembered it, you know.
Did you find it strange training again? Were you itching to get back to sea? Or?
Yes, I found it strange, really, having gone through the first part of it before, and it hadn't really changed. So I was a bit fortunate in a way, just to having a revision part of it at the beginning, and then of course learning more later on in the course. But having passed the course, and I was commissioned then in May 44, fortunate in a way, I was of the age where I was given the rank of sub-lieutenant. I think it was called Temporary Acting Sub-Lieutenant, RMVR. I think that was the title. I was immediately sent to the Combined Operations Centre at HMS Dinosaur, which was in Portland. I didn't know this, but apparently there were sufficient vacancies because of the craft being sunk on their way over or when they reached the Normandy coast. And they required a number of officers. When I was told that, you know, we were replacing certain officers on the crew, I felt I was more like sort of being cannon fodder, you know, to be sent over there myself. I suppose the attitude was, well, all right, so I've got to go somewhere, I might as well go over there. And they made me first lieutenant of one of the landing craft. And this, we took over to Normandy beaches. We were, first of all, we loaded up on the hards at Portland, in Portland, and the craft took on two or three lorries and a jeep. They were filled with the landing strips, which were wire mesh or steel mesh, which they apparently were going to lay on the beaches to stop the tanks from sinking into the sand. So we loaded that up. Then I found that they were Americans that I was dealing with on board. On came a load of K rations, which were their sort of emergency supplies in boxes. Loads of carnation milk, which we hadn't seen since we were been in England. Spam. There were all sorts of victualling items that they brought on board with them. And of course we just had to make sure that the vehicles were strapped down, and making sure that they didn't move on the way over.
Was it very different being in the landing craft? Was it a lot more informal?
Oh yes, yes. But not as informal as the Americans. I was always addressed by the crew as Sir. But when the Americans came aboard, the American Army came aboard, it's, "Hi, bud, we want to get on with this." "Oh, yes, okay, buddy, I'll do this and I'll do that." So it was, it appeared very lackadaisical in my mind, you know. I thought, well, where's the discipline? And you get them sort of smoking on the upper deck, which they weren't allowed to do, really. But they'd hide underneath something or other and keep their cigarette in their cupped hand to make sure it didn't show up above. But then we did most of the trips in daylight. And then when we got to the other side, to the Normandy beaches, they were very keen on landing on dry land. We found this wasn't always possible because the there were obstacles in the sea, and there had been craft sunk and various other things lying around on the beaches, which meant that we couldn't go very far inland, so we had to land them in, say, 3 feet of water, which they didn't like, I must say. They were very annoyed that they hadn't, that they got their uniforms all wet.
And it's just...